Preparing to delve in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Delve. My name is Nathan.
And I'm Alex.
And, Alex, you feel like going on a road trip today?
I do. I want to go somewhere fantastic.
Well, how would you feel about going all across the country?
Even better.
Well, I got good news for you, because the game we are talking about today is Highways and Byways, and we are very honored to have the creator of the game, Brandon Rollins, on the show. Brandon, thank you for coming by.
Oh, thank you for having me on. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello. And everybody at home said hello, too. You didn't hear them, but they did.
I assume they said to, like, their car speakers.
Yes, they said hello to the car speakers.
And their headphones, and then their computers, whatever they're listening to the song. They're just going, hello, and then people in public are looking at them strangely.
Yes. There's like, hello, and, like, a blank space, like we're playing Mad Libs, and then and then they can just fill it in with their own name. Which is fun, because you play Mad Libs on a road trip. I think that's still on par.
You know, honestly, if you have somebody else sitting in the passenger seat, that'd be a good way to kill some of the longer stretches of road.
Yeah, I feel like that would be a good idea. And I am really interested in this game, I have to say. I've been looking at it for the last couple days, and I wanted to say, when I first saw the board, my initial thought was, this looks a little like Ticket to Ride.
Yeah, and that's a pretty common first reaction, too.
Okay, so I don't feel insane. That's good.
No, not at all.
But then, when I actually started looking at what you do in the game, I thought, oh, no, this is a whole lot different, but it's really cool.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, the mechanics are way different than Ticket to Ride, but I was definitely inspired by the way that Ticket to Ride uses information and displays it really elegantly on the board.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, just so, in case people can't see it at home and you're just listening, the board for Highways and Byways is the United States, and it's broken up into regions, and then you see, like, the highway system overlaid on the map.
Now, the question I have are the places that it's broken up into, are they the actual sections of the United States? So, like, the Southwest, Southeast, New England... the Midwest.
It's pretty close.
Okay.
It's pretty close. I've got Northwest, Southwest, the Upper Midwest, the Great Plains, Great Lakes, Northeast, and Southeast. And they're all pretty close to the real regions. Like, you can argue over the Midwest, but nobody can actually define that. So I was just like, I'm going to do what I need to gameplay-wise there.
Sure. Right. Are the highways the major actual highways in the United States, for instance, or are they just what makes the game work well?
The byways are actually really, really close to their real-life counterparts, Ooh. With a little bit of creative license for where it got crowded on the board,
sure.
As far as routes go. Mm-hmm. The highways connecting them, though, are just shortest possible lines. So what you see are the back roads are depicted really close to their original shapes, and the highways are just straight lines.
Well, that is kind of how highways go, I guess. You can also argue that by scale, they're not really straight. There's curves in them anyways.
Yeah, you'd be surprised actually how windy even interstates can get in some areas, though.
Oh, yeah. Coming up through New Hampshire, the interstate here, or the route that you drive up through here is mostly straight through the state when you look at it. But when you zoom in, it's like, oh, no, there's a ton of little winding, you know, winding bits. It goes up and down the hills, in through the mountains, all that fun stuff.
I feel like the actual bits of New Hampshire that I've driven through were, like, Route 2, I feel like, because that took me through the mountains.
Route 2, I think, runs east to west, doesn't it?
Yeah, that sounds right. That's the direction I was heading.
Yeah, that goes from Vermont across New Hampshire, not up New Hampshire,
yep.
Which is way shorter anyways, because New Hampshire's a tiny state, and it goes right into Maine. That's up towards Berlin.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. That's up past Mount Washington, so you would have gone above where Nathan and I are from.
Oh, yes.
I think I just cut through the White Mountains.
Oh, yeah.
That, we're from that region, actually. So you drove through our backyard.
Yeah.
Well, neat.
Just north of it by about 20
small
minutes.
World.
It's a very... New Hampshire's tiny, and the world is very small.
That's true. You may have literally driven through our backyard and not realized it. It's very possible.
I do have a habit of driving through people's backyards. Oh, yeah, that's... just all over the grass and the yeah. flowers. Yeah, I should probably stop that though.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
if you've got a Hummer, it's fine.
No, I have a Toyota Camry, so it's kind of a mess. Oh,
okay, yeah. So you and I should definitely not drive through backyards because our Camrys probably won't handle it very well.
No, probably not.
You have a Camry too, Alex?
I do have a Camry. Mine's a 2001.
Oh, okay.
Oh my God! Mine is also a 2001.
Is it blue?
If you don't believe that, it is. It's a white Camry, and you can see it on the Kickstarter video. Actually, that car in there is the one that I drive.
If you had the same color car, I would have been freaking out right now.
We actually share a car. We carpool.
That's a hard carpool.
It's the South and New England carpool.
Oh, yep. that's a pretty interesting carpool. It puts some miles on your car.
A little bit. Getting to work is hell.
Oh yeah, it only took me 10 hours to get to work this morning. It's a good way to get game ideas.
Honestly, driving in a car is a great way to work on a game.
Yeah.
Unless you need to like prototype it, then it's not so good right then.
Yeah. Now, when you made Highways and Byways, were you driving in the car when you came up with the idea?
I did actually have the beginning of an idea on a long road trip out west. I was just like, you know, the interstate's laid out like a grid, as are mm-hmm. many board games, so why not work with that and try and make some point-to-point movement-based game? Mm-hmm. And that's actually how it started. I was driving, and I got that idea.
Yeah, you know, so people understand, Highways and Byways is a game that is really about a road trip.
Right, yeah, like, it started theme first, it started idea and feeling first, and I just kept trying, like, what mechanics can I apply to this that both capture the feeling and play well and have that variability that I like? So it was a lot of trial and error until I found what worked.
Could you tell me a little bit about the general gameplay?
Sure, I'll give you a quick rundown. So the basic idea of Highways and Byways is it is a casual family board game for 2 to 4 players, takes about 45 minutes to an hour, and it's for kids 10 and up, ages 10 and up. You can take this to your gaming group and it will play well, but you can also take this to your family who doesn't play a lot of board games and they can get into it too. This is something that I was aiming for. The basic idea is it is a race game. You set up shop in a home place. There are 6 home cities where you can actually put your home and your car to start with. You pick byways, essentially planning the destinations you have to reach, and you finish all those roads and you circle back home, and that's how you win. Along the way, there are a lot of other things like there are events that can happen to you. You can manage your hand to prevent negative events and make positive ones more likely. There's construction along the way as well.
Oh. Are there toll booths?
Mm-hmm. No, there are no toll booths, surprisingly.
Good. Thank goodness.
He is sold now.
You guys have it bad up there. We don't have any toll booths in this state. No toll roads at all.
Oh, nice.
Not a single.
Well, I mean, we don't have a sales tax here, so
we got to make it up somehow.
We don't have an income tax here, so I see your sales tax, and I raise your no income tax.
Okay.
Yeah, like along the way, while you're driving, you have an interesting choice that you can make, and this choice comes up every turn. You can move up to 6 spaces, or for each space you don't move, you can trade out event cards you don't want to happen to you for one unmoved space is 1 discard, and you just draw the top one off the deck. So you can gradually make your hand better as time goes on, or after a period of 5 turns, everybody will swap their hands clockwise. So what that means is you're going to want to make your hand better, 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 until it's time to start making it worse, 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 worse.
Oh.
Or you can ignore that and just move. You have to make this decision every turn.
Hmm.
So people cannot even understand this head game, and they can still have a lot of fun with it.
So you can just work to better yourself, or you can work to really screw up the person you're handing your cards
to.
Yeah,
and it's not mutually exclusive either.
Right. No, I like that. I do like that. That is clever.
Each vehicle also has its own abilities. Like, some will get to move faster in some situations, some are immune to certain negative things, and others will let you manage your hand faster. So there's variable player powers, too. Like, there's a lot of gritty game design stuff in here that I've built in there in such a way where I'm like, I want to make this really approachable to people who have never seen anything like this before.
Yeah.
And it sounds approachable to different types of gamers as well.
Exactly. Like, some people will see what I'm doing and they'll be like, that's card drafting. I like card drafting. And people who are like, who don't know that's a thing, or people who would be scared off by that, would be like, oh, I just pick one, pass one. That's easy.
Right, which is card drafting by another name.
Exactly, yeah. Sometimes it's the way that you present it is important. When people are like, I'm planning a road trip, that's different than, oh God, which of these five cards is the best one to keep?
Right.
It helps new players be introduced to the mathematical engine of a game without feeling alienated by it.
Right, because when you say card draft, and you're like, oh, Magic the Gathering does card drafts, and that's overwhelming.
Yeah, that definitely can be.
This definitely does not feel overwhelming the way that you're just describing it. What it feels like is that, you know, depending on which game I'm playing, which time, I have a whole bunch of options on how I want to strategize, if I want to strategize.
Exactly. Well, to put it one way, I playtested this with designers, and that's where I got some of the mechanic ideas that helped really refine it. And I also playtested it with my, you know, with my parents and my grandmother even at one point, and they picked up on it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like, they don't play a bunch of board games, but they picked up on it pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. When I'm looking at the board, the other thing that kind of draws my attention is some of these routes are red and some of them are blue. Could you explain what I do in these cases?
Okay, so when you are planning your road trip, there are essentially two kinds of byways. There are red ones and blue ones, and they even say that on the back. The red ones, there's 8 of them in the game, and the blue ones, there's 64. Everybody will get 2 of these red ones and 10 of the blue ones. Red ones are harder roads because of either their length or their location. And the blue ones are pretty much interchangeable in difficulty. They're really close.
So basically, I have to complete the byways that I've gotten.
That's exactly right, yeah. It's a race game where you plan your own racetrack.
But now, when I'm picking a type of car to drive, am I making that choice, or is it random?
You get to make that choice.
Okay. Because I think I like the ancient one. I saw that, and it's like, that feels like my first car.
That gets people a lot, actually, is they just see something, and they're like, that reminds them of either their first car or somebody else's, and they just pick it up because it seems right to them. You have that reaction to the beat-up Honda Civic knockoff, basically. I mean, that's what it is. That's how I described it in the art specs. Some people have that feeling with the late 1980s Jeep, and some people get that with the 70s-looking station wagon.
Mm-hmm.
And the rusty truck.
I would definitely get it with the Jeep.
You had a Jeep, right, Alex?
I did. I had a late 80s Jeep Cherokee Laredo.
Well, then you know what card you're playing.
The Hummer.
Yeah, I know. I don't think so.
Does the Jeep make it so I can ignore difficult terrain?
Actually, difficult terrain, but you can actually get around traffic problems because you can go off-road.
I just go off-road. Yep. Nice. Perfect.
Very nice. Cool.
There's snow? Not for me.
Which I feel like you guys probably play quite a bit of games, so at some point you'll probably be attracted to those cars that look like ones from past parts of your life, but you'll eventually work your way up to stationary wagon and soccer mobile, I feel like, because those are the ones that deal with hand management more directly.
I mean, Nathan honestly doesn't play a lot of games. He's a sad gamer.
I play less than you might expect. I am enthusiastic, though. I make it up in sheer enthusiasm.
It's true. He makes it up with the yay. About gaming.
I do that. That's
mascot effect.
The mascot effect. That would be my special power. is just succeeding through sheer enthusiasm.
Your five strengths, your five like strength finder strengths are woo, but like five woo.
Five woo is naivete equals yay. That's
they
my
rhyme.
Thing. Yeah, they rhyme. It's fun too. Oh man, that's the next board game we gotta make, Alex. Is just like
which one?
Super Podcaster.
Super Podcaster.
Yeah, let's just do that.
Okay. Just for the record, is there a board game of any kind about podcasting?
Probably.
You know, I don't know if that actually exists, but you know, you can make any theme work if you're trying hard enough. So
yeah.
Like maybe there's room
for that. You know, actually, Alex, if we were playing Highways and Byways, we could just have like a metagame in our head that we are doing a travel podcast.
Oh, okay. So we're recording in the locations.
We have to record in the locations. Gotcha. That's why we have to go on the road trip. I guess you could just put podcast at the end of almost anything as just a reasoning for yourself.
I mean, you really can at this point.
Yeah, you kind of can.
If you back it, I'll write podcasts in like silver Sharpie on the box, so it'll say Highways and Byways Podcast.
Okay.
It'll be the Delve Special Edition.
Yeah, Delve Special Edition.
Delve Special Edition is that there's just a piece of duct tape on part of the box that has podcast written on it.
That would actually be thematic because yes. There is a duct tape card in there.
Nice.
I love the duct tape card. I don't know what it does, but what does the,
it makes you if you hold on to that, it makes you immune to repair until the construction deck is shuffled, which is every five turns.
Oh, well, that's
see that
cool.
That works. You just use enough duct tape to hold the car together.
It's a picture of a car with duct tape holding the bumper on.
That's awesome.
That's perfect.
It's pretty great.
It's got a little knockoff baby on board sticker on their car too. Like I didn't notice it until well after I bought the artwork. I was like, oh my god, James hit another Easter egg in there.
Oh, that's good times.
I love working with my artist because he'll just hide Easter eggs in places that I won't catch until a lot later.
You're like, that's not a baby on board sticker. That says monster on board.
Mm. He hid the name of my game, my first game, actually in a couple of places in the game. I'd be interested to see if you guys can find it.
Oh, interesting.
What was the name of your first game?
My first game was Warco, so you might be able to find that if you look hard enough in the game.
Gonna have to look now.
That's on a couple of the.
Gonna have
cards.
To back it and then look.
Yeah, that's what you got to do.
Then I'll get my Delve Podcasting Edition.
Yeah. The game's available for $49, free shipping to the U.S.
Free shipping to the U.S.
Yeah. Europe and Canada, it's only five extra, customs friendly, because I've got a hookup there, and Australia is $10.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Mm-hmm.
That's actually fairly cheap shipping for Australia, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, as it turns out, if like I have already got a little bit of inventory in Games Quest Warehouse, so like I've worked with them, like I know what it costs to get stuff in. So I take the US subsidy, like I make the US shipping cheaper, and I just apply that same discount to Europe and Australia and Canada, and to them they're like, oh my god, it's so cheap, because like it's kind of a novelty to them. They're not used to seeing $5 and $10 respectively on a 1 kilogram game.
From the US.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It comes down to the way that you do logistics. If you, like, most of these games get printed in China anyway, you can ship part of your inventory to Europe, you can ship part of it to America, and you have somebody in Europe, they can distribute to different locations more cheaply than they could from America.
That makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm.
That makes so much sense.
Like, this is why I write about this kind of stuff on the blog, because, my god, figuring this out for the first time was crazy, because nobody spells this out, you know? Nobody spells out how important it is to have smooth operations to make the game not cost a whole bunch and to make sure that everybody can get everything on time or really, really close, just in case you get like delayed 2 or 3 weeks on C. Like you if you map this stuff out, you can pretty reliably get games to people for cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good thing for people to know who are prospective game developers that might be listening. I feel like a lot of people that we do talk to are going to like their first Kickstarter, and they know a little bit about it just from other people that they've talked to. But I'm always interested in some of the logistics part of it, that you don't always hear about.
Isn't that part of the reason we do this show, Nathan?
It is part of the reason we do the show. And also, also because I really like talking to you, Alex.
No, that's not even close to part of the reason we do the show.
That's not really the main reason. I like talking to game developers like Brandon, though.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Yeah, like a lot of game designers, like they don't know if you need 8,000 for manufacturing, you need to raise 10,000. If you need 12,000 for manufacturing, you need to raise 15, because mm-hmm. Kickstarter gets a cut. The payment companies like Stripe or whoever it is that they use that day these days, like they take a cut too. Mm-hmm. Shipping costs like 15-20%, can be more for light games too. So you have to factor all that mm-hmm. in.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Everything you do that transactions money takes
and
a cut.
Stretch goals
something.
Too. You got to think about the extra costs of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I've seen some, not really so many in board games and tabletop, but in other kinds of Kickstarters where you can tell that that was a major thing that they had not planned on.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like, that's why my policy for Kickstarters, never ever put a stretch goal on there that you don't have a clear plan on actually producing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a good
right.
rule.
Otherwise, you're just taking up time, like, after the fact to mm-hmm. get that in there.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, I can add these extra cards in a rule variant, and that won't take long. I can add, you know, I can upgrade the card stock. I can make a little plastic insert. I can add different color tokens and stuff like that. And all this stuff is real value. It's stuff that people will look forward to getting, but it won't. It's nothing. It's not like something that will cause shipping problems, like big heavy metal coins or something.
Right.
You know, you gotta think about all these things.
Right.
It's
right.
like spreadsheet city.
If I do X, then Y.
Pretty much, yeah. Like I've got scenarios for every $1,000 increment from like goal and a little bit under it too. I've got like from under goal to like 75, and then after that it's in like $5,000 increments.
Yeah, my God.
Up to numbers that are just completely unrealistic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, the unrealistic numbers are still fun.
Oh yeah, I told my girlfriend if I raise $1 million on Kickstarter, I will take her to see Hamilton in New York, and that's how I got my first salesperson.
Oh.
She doesn't get a free copy. She's got to pay.
Honestly, I think if I gave her a free copy, she would back it for 50 or 49 and just actually pay for it. Like she would turn down my charity on that. Parents will do the same thing. I'll be like, "Mom, I'll send you a free copy." She'll back it at 49 nonetheless.
Yeah. Yeah. But hey, you know, there's a goal. It would be fun if you had like the $1 million goal and you say, "I will take my girlfriend to see Hamilton." that is the stretch goal.
So my question on that note is, how much is the goal that you've set?
My mental, or oh no, the actual goal to go live.
Right.
Whoops.
not to go to Hamilton.
No, the goal that I've got is $15,000.
Now this is not your first Kickstarter. Warco was the first one.
That's right. I had done an expandable card game about a year and a half ago and raised $12,500. So Warco is a game about a sci-fi post-apocalypse. That's the whole idea, that instead of being this nice road trip game, it's very, very direct conflict, very, very tense the entire time. Totally different kind of game.
Well, you know, that sounds like it would be more like an Alex and Me game. Just complete conflict all the time.
Oh yeah, it's unrelenting conflict. Like you're always making hard decisions. You're always like, "Well, what's the most damaging thing I can do to my opponent?" That kind of thing. Highways and Byways is me atoning for that sin of creating that game, of creating that mean game.
I created a really dark dystopic thing, and then I said, "You know, let's go on a road trip."
Yeah, pretty much. I was just like, "I want to make a different kind of game." And I want to see what happens if I try and make a different kind of game.
Having done the Kickstarter for Warco, what did you learn about the process when you Kickstarted that game?
Oh my goodness. So My entire thing is that I was just chasing a childhood dream kind of passion project with Warcoat, and that's what Highways and Byways kind of is, too. It's a passion project. I was chasing a passion project. I put like 6 months of time on it, went to Kickstarter way before I was ready, fell flat on my face. First time I did that, I made like $1,600 on a $7,000 goal. It wasn't pretty. I spent 6 months actually getting into the board game industry and trying to understand how things worked, because I followed my passions first. I wasn't already a part of the bigger community. I got to know what people were interested in. I started talking to people and collaborating with a lot of people, relaunched the campaign, managed to get by. What I learned from that, from the Warco campaign, was that the most important thing you can do is build an audience. If you are trying to get something kickstarted, you have to build an audience, and you have to work on doing that a little bit every single day, or very close to every single day.
Right, right.
That's, like, you can make the most perfect game for Kickstarter, and if you launch it and you get no traffic, it won't succeed. It will just fall down right there.
Right, right.
Likewise, you can make a game that's really left field, like, well, frankly, Highways and Byways, and you take that to Kickstarter, you have an audience, and it will actually, you'll be able to succeed with that.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like you know, every Kickstarter seems to have a similar story, but there's always interesting things to learn about it from every person that's gone through the process.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had actually fulfilled a lot of that campaign from my home, so I learned a lot about shipping that way. I was moving out of my apartment into a home at the same time I was fulfilling that campaign.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's,
how did that go?
Well, I mean, like, I got the stock 2.5 weeks before I closed on the house and started moving in. So I got all the U.S. bound packages ready to go. I had them wrapped up, postage, everything, and I shipped them out at such a time where they would arrive only a few days earlier than Europeans and Canadians and Australians would get their stuff.
Oh, nice.
But basically, I had to get tons and tons and tons of inventory in my house and or in my apartment and out of my apartment before I moved it into the home. Cause like, who wants to take a 100+ packages, you know, big heavy game packages into a new home?
A masochist?
Yeah.
A masochist. Yeah. My brother actually took them to the post office for me. Like, I had wrapped them and everything, but he took them to the post office and he said the box that held the packages was so big, a card game, mind you. Mm-hmm. The box that held these packages was so big that he hurt his back. Oh, and he's not that bad. I mean, like, he was just sore for a couple of days, and he's a big, tall dude. He's like 6'3" and he's like 220 and swole. And he was like, man, this was really heavy.
Oh, boy. So now that you have a board game, he's probably not volunteering for that this time.
I'm not fulfilling that one on my own. Fulfillerite can actually do that for cheaper than I can do it from my home.
That is good news.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If I send a package from my home, it's $12.50. If I send it from Fulfillrite, it's $9.50 or like $9 or something.
Wow. That
yeah,
is
they,
something.
Like, they have deals with UPS or USPS, one of the two, to make the postage way cheaper.
Oh, that is awesome.
Because they ship such a high volume from their warehouse.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So they're able to get better rates because of volume. Okay.
Exactly. Okay. It's like how Amazon and can actually get really competitive rates from UPS.
Right. Right. Because if you get...
So I always get free shipping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Why Prime memberships are so lucrative now. You can get the Prime and then we'll ship it for free. I am always surprised that they're able to do that.
I think we just need a game design Prime service now.
Oh, that would be
amazing.
That would actually be a really good idea, Alex. Damn.
If only I knew anything about business.
Yeah, if you knew about business, we'd be all set.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. I can't take that one on. That one's really big. That's fulfillment stuff right there.
Ooh, boy. Yeah, that is a problem. Hey, if anyone out there is listening, that would be a really good idea. go ahead.
Fulfill right. You figure this one out for us.
You have fun with that. You go right ahead. I just want to mention. That's all. We just want to mention.
Also, there needs to be some kind of game about Swole.
Oh, absolutely.
Like Gym Rat the Game or something. That would be really fun.
Yeah,
I'm
not
gonna lie.
I mean, I don't know how many of us gamers actually go to the gym.
I've been working consciously on building muscle for the last 4 or 5 months, so I might actually be able to turn that into a game. I probably won't, though. I got some other theme ideas going in my head.
I mean, I feel like it'd be something Jason Anarchy would actually be into.
Get Swole the Game. Mm-hmm. Would involve eating an uncomfortable amount of food, most of which is whey protein or chicken, mm-hmm. and then lifting heavy stuff until your arms hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
Picking things up and putting things down, getting swole.
Yeah, going to the, spending time at the Iron Temple.
Yep. And every time you, check out chicks at the gym, you lose mass.
Oh, or yes. Like status. Or yeah, so, yeah, you lose status. Yeah, you just lose mass.
You can score in mass. It'll be BMI.
We can call it Super Gym Champion.
Or Super Swole.
Super Swole. Yeah.
Super Swole, yeah. That's kind of a ring to
Super
it.
Swole,
yeah.
The card game. Or,
Super Swole, the card
game. Whatever it is.
Oh, yeah, that would be a cool card game. Because you know what? Then you could play it at the gym. You could bring it with you in your gym bag. Little micro game.
You gotta weight the cards.
A nice little small box game and have little custom dumbbell punch outs.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh,
and like
oh.
Little 45-pound disc weights. Is
and it can be, yeah, the card, like you were saying, Alice, but instead of weighting the cards, you just make them like magnetic so you can put them on dumbbells. And that's how you're supposed to play at the gym, is just like putting the dumbbells into the center of the board.
Yeah, like when it's not your turn to do the squats, somebody will put them on while you're squatting the big dumbbell or barbell.
Yeah.
Alternatively, you can make it a game where you actually have to do the exercises if things happen.
Yes.
That make it a workout game.
That makes
we
it super realistic.
We accidentally created Wii Fit.
We fit for the tabletop.
That game was hype. I will actually stick up for that game. That had some stuff going for it.
You know what? They need... Nintendo is really big on, like, eventually going analog like they did with Labo. That's what they need for Wii Fit. Is they need, like, a Labo version for Wii Fit, and it's basically just, like, a gym, but, like, with a digital interactive component.
You know, one thing I really appreciate about Nintendo is that they're willing to do weird stuff like that. Like, they're so rich as a company.
Yeah.
Not just in games. They have huge financial investments, too. That's, like, part of how they stay alive.
Yeah.
They can just do this weird experimental stuff, and they're like, whatever, we're, in good with the Japanese stock market. It doesn't matter what happens. And sometimes they do fantastic, sometimes they do terribly, and somehow it shakes out. Like, they take risks.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I have not played the Switch, but I've heard a lot of really good things about it.
I have. I have heard a lot of good things about it.
Yeah.
Man, I wish I had time for that. Like, running a business is hard, you guys. You want to run a business for me? I want to play Mario Odyssey.
Oh,
we can barely run our podcast, man.
It's very true. I think the thing that's going to be big for me on Switch is this year they're supposed to do Pokemon the RPG on the Switch.
And, holy smokes.
And if they actually...
That's got potential.
Oh, I've been waiting for 20 years for them to do a console version of a Pokemon RPG, and they swear that they're making it. They swear that they have a team on it right now, so I'm going to hold them to it. But that would probably be the turning point where I would have to pick one up. But then they...
Would you have a class in that as an RPG, or would you just be a trainer?
No, I think you'd be a trainer. They said that it takes a very similar format to, like, the red and blue versions. So.
Well, what if I want to be a Pokemon photographer, like that guy, Tracy, whatever his name was.
Pokemon Snap.
They made Pokemon Snap, yeah.
Yeah,
they
I mean,
have
that
game.
Was a great game.
It was, but, I had
or what
that.
If I want to do the Pokemon cute contests, whatever those are called.
Oh, my goodness, Pokemon Snap would be such a different game these days.
It really would.
It would be like, you would get ranked on taking the best picture with your iPhone. It would have little like camera, like face recognition, and then you would put filters on it. That's mm-hmm. how a modern Pokemon Snap would
I mean, yeah. it would be Pokemon Go, but instead of taking and capturing them, you'd just be taking pictures.
Pokemon
in,
Go
in
was
ARG.
Such a phenomenon when it got started. Yeah. I was at Myrtle Beach, like a few, okay, not even the real Myrtle Beach, like North Myrtle Beach. And like when that first came out, people were so, so busy like getting Pokemon that you could not walk across the sidewalk. Like it was, they crowded the sidewalks of North Myrtle Beach to where you could not go through them because they were trying to get Pokemon.
And I'm guessing it was a lot of 18 to 30 year olds too.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, well, that, those are like the only people who hang around North Myrtle Beach because that's not like Myrtle Beach is already like one of the less classy beaches in South Carolina. I'm sorry if that offends anybody. It's just Myrtle Beach has like a reputation.
Oh, North they don't have Myrtle internet Beach. In South Carolina, so they're not listening to this.
God.
Ouch.
Ow.
Ouch.
That's harsh.
Oh, that's not nice.
You know what? If anyone that is listening to this is from South Carolina, you can fight me on it on Twitter.
There you go.
Big caveat, just covering myself here. I was in the touristy parts. The other parts are probably fine.
Yeah.
They're probably a wonderful place to live, and you get to go to the beach, and it's probably a really wonderful place.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the touristy parts of almost any state are usually, they don't look the best.
Yeah, like, I love Chattanooga, and yet there are touristy parts of this place that just make me go like, oh my god, how many people had to go to Rock City this day?
Yeah.
I mean, Nathan, you're kind of from the touristy part of New Hampshire.
I kind of am. Except
for the beach. And
the touristy part of New Hampshire, the big city of...
The touristy of freedom, the big
no,
city.
No, North Conway, Nathan.
Well, North Conway's close. North Conway is probably one of the bigger areas anyway. And North Conway's not exactly a real nice-looking place, so...
It's well, the town isn't bad. It's the mountains that people go for.
Yeah.
I actually had to look up the name of the biggest city in New Hampshire.
Probably Manchester.
I know a lot of cities in the U.S. because I've been doing some geography-related things lately.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I was still struggling on that.
For highways and byways, I'm sure. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
When I think of New Hampshire's biggest city, I think of Boston.
Yeah,
that's not too far from the truth.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. But then... I do remember that, like, they were trying to, I guess, fairly successfully, I would see a lot of book tours. They used to start in Boston, and then they started in Portsmouth, and then they'd go to Boston. So we actually had, like, Chuck Palahniuk would come through on book tours, and he would be in Portsmouth to start the book tour before he went to Boston. It's great for authors. There's a lot of bookstores. And for a little while, they were talking about how, like, that's really going to be, like, the next starting place for a lot of book junkets.
That makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, it's also got a pretty convenient location, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not really that far away from, like, the big cities to the south that you can't go there. Yeah.
That's because you can get across New Hampshire in 3 hours.
That's true. You certainly can.
It's right between Portland and Boston, which puts it in a pretty good spot.
Especially with writers or anything that's artistic like that, we actually have a pretty big sector of the populace that likes that. So it's an audience you'd speak to.
They're just excited for Stephen King being within driving distance.
He will.
And when he's within driving distance, he's within striking distance of your car.
One thing of note to anybody who is visiting New England and wants to meet Stephen King, just because he's close by does not mean he will talk to you. he will not come out of his house just to speak to you. He's very particular.
Do not suggest hitting Stephen King with a car. He gets pissed and writes books about it.
Did you do that?
No, that happened up here, though. Someone hit him with a car. He wrote a book about it.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
He did. Wasn't that... Wait, wasn't that...
What a terrible person to accidentally hit.
Yeah. You know that... Oh, my God. It's like breaking up with Taylor Swift. You know that's going to come back to haunt you. Man.
I'm going to be real careful next time I'm driving around Bangor.
Yeah, yes, be very careful. Anyway, Boy, we took a road trip on that conversation right there.
Oh, it's okay.
But you know what? That's
actually,
fine.
You know, I actually stayed in a motel in Bangor once. I'm sorry, that's random and not helping. But
that's all right. The most important thing you should take away from this conversation is do not mess with Stephen King. I really want to thank Brandon Rollins for coming by and talking about Highways and Byways. I also realize that the vehicle we really do need on the show is a Segway, because we really need a better one of those. And speaking of which, if you are interested in finding out more information about the work Brandon does, please go over to BrandonTheGameDev.com. That's actually where he does a blog, and he talks about the entire game development process. That's a really good place to go for more information. He has a lot to offer. If you want to find out more information about Delve, go over to DelveCast.com. You can find everything that we do over there. You can also find us on iTunes and Google Play and all sorts of wonderful outlets where podcasts are, well, not sold, but distributed. You can find us there. Please rate and review and subscribe when you go. Do not forget to check us out on Twitter. I am at Citanium, Alex is at EXP Limited, and the show is at Delve Podcast. And if you happen to be over there, why not follow Brandon as well, at Byways Game. Speaking of Highways and Byways, it is on Kickstarter through April 20th. Please go check it out for yourself and see all the wonderful road trips that you can go on if you get the game. However, just like Road Trip, we are not quite done with this one, and we will be back with part two of Highways and Byways next week, where Brandon and Alex and I kind of go on almost a sightseeing tour, but with audio. So an oratory tour of the country. That's a thing, right? An oratory. There we go. It just wouldn't be an episode of Delve without terrible puns, right? Until next time, thank you for joining us, and goodbye. And we are very happy to have the creator of the game, Brandon Collins. Rollins. Boy, so, I was
you
want to so
try
close.
That one again? You were so...
I was so close.
All right, have you been drinking, Nathan?
So, every time Nathan makes a mistake, we drink, right? That's how
oh, God.
This works?
Brandon. Oh, God.
Raise your glasses.
Raise your glasses. Here we go. All right. One more time, folks. Okay. Yeah, well, you know, we burn that bridge when we get there. Oh, I mean, it's another road thing. Okay. So, all right.
It's going to happen a lot on the show.
It is. It is. We will have...
time to move on the old dusty trail.
There will be a lot of references to road songs. We're going up the country. Okay, I know that you've been in game development for a while now, and it feels like you are very much like Highways and Byways. You have a cross-section of the gaming tabletop people that you kind of intersect with. And so I'm really happy to... I also did a crash landing when I was trying to make that metaphor... which is also very much like what happens on a road trip, right, Alex?
Nathan's on fire right now, which is also something that happens on a road trip. So.
I am also
what
on.
What kind
fire.
Of road trips have you guys been on?
Strange ones.
Circus.
Yeah.
I did break down in North Carolina once in the mountains, but that's not even. I didn't even catch on fire.
I mean, that's a good thing. That is a good thing.
It's very.
I was rescued by a man in a rusted out Chevy. That... the thickest accent I ever heard.
Somehow that doesn't surprise me about
no,
North Carolina.
I live in Tennessee too, so I've heard a lot of thick accents.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Anyways.
Anyway. So
you've made a game called Highways and Byways, we hear.
That's right.